Hi, I'm Justin Boyd.
I'm Brittany Pacheco.
And I'm Vhagar, Dahars, Daenerys, Valyrian, Targaryen.
And we are the Watchers in the Basement.
Welcome to the Watchers in the Basement. We are down a few Watchers. George is not going to be with us today, and Tristan's will be with us shortly. So it's only one Watcher, I guess. I don't know why I said a few, but one person. We're still trying to figure all this stuff out. So anyway, we're here today to talk about season one, episode 7 of House of the Dragon. The episode's titled Driftmark. And before we get into everything, this was an episode that was, you know, had a funeral. A dragon was stolen.
Why do you laugh at the funeral bit?
No, I mean, like, it's ridiculous. Like, when you run down the list, like, a funeral, a dragon was stolen, kids were fighting, there's a wedding, and a fake death scene. So before we, like, break all this stuff down, let's get everybody's overall thoughts. Brittany, what did you think about the episode overall?
Best episode of the season, hands down. It knocked off the previous episode and any others. It's so well done. The dialogue is so beautifully written. Mm-hmm. And there was action, obviously, in this episode. Dragons, need I say more? But yeah, I have thoughts, of course, because there's variations from the book as to what happened in the show. Yep. So I'm very excited to be here to talk about today's episode. Shout out to Geeking Out with Melly Mel and also her husband, Dirk, who's listening. Appreciate y'all being here. Yep. Hopefully we'll get more followers, listeners joining us to share their thoughts, because damn, this episode was good. Frank, what are your thoughts?
I feel like I keep saying the same thing over and over again, but like you said, Brittany, this has been my favorite episode so far of the series. It doesn't matter who they bring off the bench to act. Like, they seem to do a great job. Like, I knew nothing of these kids until last week, and like, they all have done a great job. Like, they are just they seem to fit into the cast seamlessly, and it's so this great synergy with the kids, the adult actors, the dragons. Like, everything is just, it's just symbolic and it just fits. And this is, like I said, man, this is PhD level acting right now that we're seeing with a lot of this talent. And I don't know how you top this for next week. I'm sure they will, but it's like, I always get nervous when you throw so much at you at one time and when 58 minute episode, but it just seems to fit. Like, everything just, it's just, the pace is picking up, but like, the story still makes sense. So A1 episode, man. A1 performance by everybody.
Yeah, you know, this episode was kind of thematically like darker, and also visually darker, which I thought people were going to kind of complain about, which I'm sure there are people who complain about it, but I thought even that part was pretty cool, because it was like, they're in the darkness, but you're contrasting that with their silver hair, so you could still see people. Brittany, I think you really hit it on the head when you said about, you know, there are so many great lines of dialogue in this episode, and like, really powerful scenes.
Without a doubt.
Yeah.
I mean, it's eloquently written, and the dialogue is almost Shakespearean in a way, how they express themselves. There's some lines from Viserys and Daemon that I'm like, ooh, like, I felt that in my soul, just how it was delivered, how it was written. So yeah, like, the dialogue in this whole series has been on point, without a doubt.
Yeah, no, and as Frank said, the acting is fantastic. The kids, you're right, the kids were great. And these were little kids for the most part. And, you know, like, with the fighting scene, which we'll delve into more here in a little bit, but I mean, that was such a great scene, and the show just keeps delivering every week, and it just kind of ratchets it up every week. And I love the show, and this week I have a lot of questions, and not the most important question, but the first question I want to pose to y'all is, because we see Otto Hightower very soon in this episode. He's got the Hand of the Kingpin on his, you know, jacket or whatever. How the hell is he already back as Hand of the King? I mean, like, don't we think that, you know, obviously it's Lena's funeral. She died in the last episode, So we're saying, like, what? This is a couple of weeks after her death at the most. How is he already back as Hand of the King? Is there no one else in the realm that could be Hand of the King?
Yeah, it's a lot of this, and Tristan has to, like, really reel me back in, because the flash forwarding, the highly suggestive mindset that the writers want us to have with certain scenes and certain events, it's kind of like, this is a huge event. Like, the guy that you thought was conspiring, and I'm talking like as if I'm Viserys, the guy that pretty much has conspired to have his daughter, you know, to sit as queen of the Seven Kingdoms and bear these children and try to afford his grandson as succession, as the heir. This needs to be done on TV screen. Like, this is a big event where I feel like Patty and the guy who plays Otto could have had some great powerful scenes of just bringing him back into the fold. I think they missed a mark on that. I get it, it's a limited series, blah 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 blah. But again, you're the writers of this of House of the Dragon. You know what's important to be displayed on TV. I don't want to hear this excuse that it's a limited series, you got to fit everything in. You're HBO, you have the money. Stress this shit out as much as you can, and please implement the important scenes. And Otto coming back is an important scene that needs to be told on screen.
Yeah, I just want to see that conversation between Viserys and Otto Hightower. How does that go? I mean, like, you got to think that would be something dramatic there. Brittany, what do you think about that?
Well, just like what Trisha, aka the Texas Potterhead, appreciate you being here, is saying here. She says, "Ugh, I thought it was rather swift to move Otto Hightower back in. Like, there's a reason we gave him the X." You're absolutely correct. I mean, it's been over 10 years at this point since Otto Hightower was given the X, but let's consider too how quickly Laris Strong moved to fulfill the Queen's wishes, right? So that she could bring her father back into King's Landing. And so it all kind of makes sense, I guess, in terms of progressing the story for the show purposes. But I do agree with Frank, like, that was an important part of the book that we didn't get to see play out on screen. However, it is what it is. You get the point. And you further that point with Otto telling Allison at the very end about how Aemon kind of helped their side by bringing, I'm not going to spoil that just yet, but they now have more ammo on their side. And he says to Allison, you know, with you and I together, you know, we're going to prevail, basically. And Otto Hightower, like Mel says here, he's a snake. He's slithering his way back. And to consider Otto being back and having Laris Strong on the Green Council is very concerning, extremely concerning.
Yeah, definitely. And you know, something this show, it's, Frank mentioned the time jumps, and I understand that part of it, but I also would say that there's a lot of stuff that's like in the middle that I think we want to see, that I think we should see. Mm-hmm. And even back to the original Game of Thrones series, wasn't there something wasn't there a reunion that we didn't get to see that we should have seen? Right. What, like, didn't Sansa and was it Sansa and Jon? We saw them reunite, but then we didn't see them all reunite with Arya. Wasn't that right? Like, I know there was something where people were like, why didn't that happen on screen? And also, like, when people found out about Jon's parentage, like, some of them didn't find out on screen. And that was like, they should have shown us when Tyrion told Sansa saying, like.
I think what you're referring to, Justin, is when John learns of his parentage and he tells Bran to tell his sisters about who he really is. We never saw that play out on screen. We did see the reunion between John and Arya.
Right.
Because he's like, well, how did you survive this? And she's like, how did you survive a stab to the heart? And that was like, oh, we're just going to leave it hanging like that. Like, cool, fine. Mm-hmm. But I think that's what it was. It was learning his true parentage.
Yeah,
but even going back to season 6, where the episode where Jon wakes up from the dead, and the very next episode Sansa shows up at the wall, that discussion's not had. Like, Jon doesn't say, "Hey, by the way, your boy was dead for about 3 days, man, and I rose by Jesus Christ." But, you know, I'm glad you're here though. let's go back. Let's take back the Stark stronghold. Like, these conversations need to be had. Like, you're
the conversation of him being Jesus Christ. Really? No, I'm just kidding.
I think you're handcuffing your actors of not being able to act and like really make some monumental like memories on screen by taking away these powerful pivotal acting moments. So I feel you on that, Justin, for sure.
I just think like it's like transitional stuff that you would think that, I mean, stuff we want to see that you would think they would think would be important. But I mean, granted, this show is awesome. The original show was great. I'm not complaining about that. I just like, there's little stuff where I'm like, these would be great scenes that you'd want these characters to interact and be face to face and explain things or just mention them, because there's something else in this episode for example, like in the last episode, so Sir Harwin is, you know, burned to death, right? And he is the lover of Rhaenyra, and we don't see her find out that news. Now in this episode, she knows, and I think they did a good job with her conversations with her children, her conversation with Daemon, and I think maybe her conversation with Laenor, that like, you understand that she obviously knows this information, that obviously it's something that hurt her. But even like something like that, I would think that you'd want her to find out, like see her finding out that information. And maybe I'm asking for too much, but I think that part of it, they did a good job of having other characters talk about it. And, you know, then you get her reaction to their discussion point. But I don't know. I guess I'm kind of greedy because the show's so great. I just want it to like be even slightly better. But anyway, that's just my deal. So I think the best way to tackle this episode is just, let's just go chronologically how it happened in the episode. Cause like everything kind of leads into everything else. That's kind of Game of Thrones anyway, but let's start out with a funeral scene. There's a lot of people, a lot of staring at the funeral scene, a lot of looking around, looking across the room or the area. Brittany, what was your take overall of Laena's funeral?
So I thought it was beautifully placed, just with the fact that the Velaryons are more sea people than compared to the Dark Targaryens, who are dragons, right?
That's a real location, not to interrupt, but like that's a real location that they shot on.
Yes. Yeah. Right. So I think that's stunning, of course, that these actors can go on location and just be in the environment and kind of play out this scene as if it were a really real thing, of course. So what was beautiful about this scene, of course, the rocks, the water, and the delivery of, I guess you could say, the eulogy in High Valyrian, and the message that the uncle, the brother is, I can't think of his name right now, but Corlys Velaryon's brother.
Vaemond,
thank you. Yeah. Vaemond is delivering, you know, the eulogy, and he's kind of talking about how the Velaryon blood runs thick. It must never wear thin. And you see the camera shift back and forth between him and then Rhaenyra, and it's like, we're taking shots, obviously. We're definitely taking shots about how her children are not true Velaryons. And then the fact that fucking Daemon Targaryen laughs. He laughs at that bit. And before I continue, Justin, I'm welcoming Tristan into the fold.
Oh,
Tristan,
great.
We're so glad that you're able to join us now, because we're just getting into the nitty gritty of this episode.
Happy to be here. Let's get it.
Well, so Tristan, real quick, what are your overall thoughts of the episode?
I thought this was, so it wasn't until watching this episode that I realized that there is a clear pro Rhaenyra slant that's happening in the show, because there's some choices, there's some characterization choices in this episode that deviate pretty dramatically from the text. I think this episode clearly is setting up like a much more overt protagonist-antagonist situation between the Greens and the Black. We see it through like just the happenings of this episode. The way that Allison reacts to, you know, Aemon's eye being taken out, like completely overreacts to a degree. I think the show is clearly making a statement as to who it wants to portray as more as of the good guy, I guess, and which side, at least, maybe not individual character, but which side is being seen as the antagonistic side. So, great episode. I mean, again, just the acting, like I rewatched it earlier today, and like same thing, like the way like they each scene is just really shows the focus between like characters that are there, the dialogue again, just continues to get better, honestly, through episode. I love the episode. Again, my one gripe with this episode is of several, but the main one, the thing that I took away the most after both watches is that episodes 1 through 6, I think the show or the writers wants you to feel kind of neutral, at least about both sides. Mm-hmm. After episode 7, like it's very clear who is the the determined protagonist. So that's my biggest gripe.
That's interesting because to me, this is the first time where I could really see Allison's side, because when they have their confrontation, I mean, she says it. She's like, look, like, what about all this? Like, I've been doing everything I'm supposed to do, right? I've all these things, I've got all the rules and the duties and everything. And like, you just do whatever you want, and you get away with it. To me, that was like because she's never really come out and said that out loud in a group of people to everybody. And so to me, that made it feel more like, hey, like there is there's a division here, and you can kind of see both sides. For me, that was, for once, I could kind of see both sides of this whole battle for power.
And like for me, I've always been able to see both sides. Yeah. Like I joke that I'm definitely like more pro Allison than Rhaenyra, but I'm
still
neutral. Yeah, I mean, I also know how the story ends. But
that's fair.
I mean, tell me the good reason I would have for being like definitively team Rhaenyra. Like, what has Rhaenyra? This is my thing. I've been seeing like through Twitter, through different platforms, I've been seeing a lot of people like kind of bash pro outside. I haven't seen like one clear logical reason why anybody would be team Rhaenyra. Like, if anything, I think we should all be like kind of in the middle between both, because there's no good side on either one.
Yeah, that's where I am. So
I think personally, I think we need to put a pin in that. And when we get to that confrontation, we'll elaborate that on that
that's fair.
Because I do have questions about Tristan's loyalties or allegiance. And I think Frank does too.
Yeah.
But let's keep going with what we were initially discussing.
So let's go back to the funeral scene, the very beginning. Brittany, what are your thoughts? We talk about how people are staring at other people, and this is something I think that was interesting. Did y'all notice how quickly Kristen Cole noticed that Laris was like leering at Allison? And so I wonder what y'all's perspective. Do y'all think that Laris obviously is power hungry, but is there more to it? Is he, you know, does he want to get with Allison? And also, like, you know, Kristen Cole is very protective of Allison. Is that because maybe they've got something going on also?
So I will answer first, and then I'm going to toss it to Frank. To answer your question about Kristen Cole, no, I don't think there's a desire other than the fact that he's her sworn protector, and his duty is to make sure that no one is going to cause harm to the queen, because then it falls back on his head about why he didn't protect her.
Right.
And Laris Strong is just stranger danger and for sure power hungry. Mm-hmm. I think the show is really giving him more of a character development than the book did. Frank and Tristan, for that matter, too. I mean, agree or disagree in terms of Laris Strong having more in this show than in the book.
Yeah. So Fire and Blood is like, it's written from like the perspective of maesters and like researchers of like the Targaryen line, the Seven Kingdoms. So there's a lot of, I don't want to say plot holes, but there's a lot of predictions and guessing with a lot of these people's motivations and what they want. And that's including Larys. Like, we don't really know, from what I remember, I mean, I read the books 3 years ago, but I don't really remember Larys' motivations in the books. A lot of it's highly suggestive. A lot of it's kind of like left to interpretation. I think the show is doing, giving him more credence of a character to like be more of that pretty Baelish character. But in the books, it's not really, we don't really know. I mean, this Maester's years later that still, you know, try to understand Larys as a person, as a High Lord. So, Tristan.
He actually plays a very, very integral part in the text. He doesn't get a lot of lines. Like, there's not a lot of like dialogue, but there's not a ton of dialogue between most of the characters. But Larys plays a big role. It's just the fact that he's so in the shadows on the show and in the books. And he's only talked about through like third person, right? So we don't really get
inner workings.
Yeah, like we don't really get to see his POV motivation or get to see him at least like admit his motivations. Up until his death, like he's just working different angles, you know what I'm saying? So, same thing has happened on the show.
Yeah, but I do like, in terms of what we're seeing with Larys and more of his close interactions with the queen, because it's kind of like, for others who wanted to be Team Allison, but maybe are so unsure now because Larys is in her corner. Larys has done things on her behalf. Maybe she didn't, of course, directly say, "We'll go and do this," what happened at Harrenhal Hall. But having Larys strong in her corner, in terms of Team Green, it's great in a way, but it's also really bad because it's very questionable, because Allison does say to Larys in the end about how she not only is going to call upon said friend, but for his discretion and I can't think of the other word that she said, but basically just for his skill set and for his discretion. So in other words, she's going to need him to do dirty work, which is very questionable.
But I think it also shows with that scene with Kristen talking to Allison, it shows the high level. I mean, I don't really fuck with Allison, but I will say this. She has a high level of compartmentalization, because she's been working with Larys for what, a decade now, right? And Kristen doesn't really know Larys, doesn't really know the relationship between Larys and Allison. So for him to even like question that shows me that Allison has categories of where she puts people, what she like decides to like talk about, release, and all that kind of stuff too. So, that's what I got from that scene with Kristen and Allison.
So let's quickly answer a question from the chat. Trisha wants to know, when the king said homeboy didn't need to stay back with the queen, referring to the commander of the King's Guard, he didn't need to stay back with the queen when he went to bed. Is that meant to show a drift between them after the strong incident? I would say 1,000% yes. There's definitely rifts between the king and the queen, just because she wants to continually bring up about Rhaenyra's bastard children, and the king's like, I don't want to hear it. You're not listening to me. I just don't want to hear it.
And also, she just attacked his daughter, so he's like salty as fuck. Yeah, like she's bleeding from her arm on the floor, and like he's probably pissed. But in all for Sarah's, you know, faction and how he does things, he's indirect, he's very ho-hum about certain things, and he doesn't really put his foot down. So
he just misses his brother, though. He wants Daemon to come back. That's all he needs, right? I like how in that scene he tells Daemon to come home, and Daemon's like, Pentos is my home. It's like, no, it's not. But whatever.
But let's talk about Damon real quick in that scene, because like you said, everyone is kind of like just eyeing each other, which, by the way, from inside the episode, Ryan Condal said that that was actually the first scene that these actors
shot
together. Yeah. So they really didn't know each other. They really didn't know how to work together just yet. And so it kind of does show in that scene that like they're kind of like
well, this was the, each other. This was the first episode they filmed.
Right. No, I know. Yeah. But what I'm saying is that particular scene, the reception, if you will, was the first scene. Right. And so, but now jumping back to Damon and Viserys, with Viserys reaching out and saying, it's been too long. Come back to King's Landing. I have a place for you in court. And he says, you know, if you need anything. And Damon's like, I don't need anything. And you can clearly see the hurt on his face. Like, what we didn't see in the previous episode after Lena's death and him consoling his children, because that was circulating all across social media, the pictures of him hugging his daughters and talking with them, like we missed that, obviously. So Damon's really not the cold-hearted person that a lot of people perceive him to be. Like, he does have a compassionate side to him, and I think to finally see that across his face of he's hurting. Like, he's hurting that, you know, he loved Lena in a way, or they were happy enough, whatever his words were. Like, he's hurting. Like, he is a human being, people. Like, he does hurt, and he's not in a place or mind to accept help at this point, I guess.
But he's also there to watch whatever happens unfold, you know, and lean up against the wall.
He leans and watches.
Yeah, right. Exactly. What did y'all think about Corlys talking with Luke, telling him like, "Hey, the Driftwood Throne or whatever is going to be yours," and the kid's like, "I don't want it." You know, he's like channeling Jon Snow.
This is Corlys's desperate attempt, his last ditch attempt and effort to like keep his name in history books. That's all it is at this point. Like, it's not even really about blood. And he said it. Like, if it was really about his bloodline, he would have made one of his granddaughters heir. I mean, he has that right. He's the High Lord of Driftmark, but it's all about the Valyrian name. He know damn well them grandkids ain't his. Like, they white as fuck. Like, they got an ounce of black in them. And it's all about now, it's just, when I'm dead and gone, this dynasty, I want the Valyrian name in this world. And to me, it's kind of sad. Like, this is what we, you know, the Valyrians, they ran from Valyria and the Dragon Lords, and, you know, they enslaved people and over this powerful faction. And now they're down to a gay son, two granddaughters, and two grand male grandkids. They're not even Valyrian. So it's a desperate, sad attempt just to keep his name in the history books, you know, for the next 1,000 years. And I hated that scene, man, because it just showed so much weakness and desperation on his part.
Tristan, what did you think about Corlys and then his talk with Rhaenys after that?
So to me, it accelerates, like it illustrates the tragedy of the story as well. We talked about this last week, but these kids are being used as like vehicles for their families, like legacies, for the family squabbles, the infighting, the civil war, the ambitions, like all these insecurities and flaws. And these things are so normal for them that it's so commonplace for Corlys to kind of to talk to Luke and be like, "Hey, like, all this is going to be yours." And he's like, "Hey, but you're not really doing the math on that. For me to get this, somebody has to lose." And like, they're still kids, and they still live in this world, this space where like they don't want people to lose in order for them to gain things. Like, they don't, the complete, like, just treachery and,
well, just lack of people don't care.
Well, yeah, I know, but like they still have that innocence. Like, these kids still have some of these kids have all of their innocence. Some of these kids have some of their innocence. Like,
well, I think Luke picked up on it though. He says he didn't want to be Lord of Driftmark, because he says, then that means everyone is dead. I mean, I think he realizes that in order to ascend, like, other people are gone. And for someone as young as he is to get it, it's pretty impressive.
Very impressive. And again, it just shows how the older you get, the less you get it. Right? Like, Corliss is, he's an OG in the game. Like, he's, you know, a legend, you know, and all he knows is the just driving his family legacy. And he, like, you don't, once that becomes your primary motivation, you have to lose a lot of humanity, because a lot of part of driving legacy and attaining these things for your family is taking something away from other people. And the kids understand that because they're kids and they're supposed to understand that. It's the adults who, from Corliss to Rhaenyra to Alicent to Otto to, like, they just fail to realize how a lot of these warts that they have, just as far as like the way they deal with conflict, is being passed to their children, and like it's gonna have irreparable damage on these kids. Because that's the way I look at every scene. It's like, damn, like, it's really fucked up what's going to happen to character X because of these issues.
Right. But Princess Rhaenys, like, point blank tells her husband, her lord husband, like, because he's still on this bit about the crown should have been yours and the fools at the Great Council, you know, went against you. And she's like, listen, I let go of that long time ago. You're the only one here who still harbors on that. You're the one who wants to make it happen, and you don't see what's really in front of you and what it's doing to our children. Like, she sees it plain as day, right? And Corliss, whatever ambitions he has to keep his name in the history books and have a legacy and things of that nature, it's kind of like Viserys. He knows it, he sees it, he just doesn't want to believe it, because there's something greater, such as legacy, that's more important to him than anything else.
Well, and what he says, and we talked about how there's so many great lines in this episode, and what he said is very true. History does not remember blood, it remembers names. That's true, right? Like, 1,000 years from now, they're not going to remember that, oh, that kid actually wasn't, you know, a true Valerion or whatever, you know, like, they're just going to know their last name was Valerian. So that's what it is. So, again, another great line in this episode. But then after that, we see Rhaenyra and Daemon. They go for this long walk on the beach and they talk about a variety of things. Obviously, she talks about how she tried to conceive with Laenor and that, you know, they tried, but there was no joy in it. And they even kind of discuss, you know, Daemon brings up Ser Harwin's death, and she's quick to defend Alicent at this point. Obviously, this is earlier in the episode. She says that she doesn't think she's capable of murder. And I think her opinion of that changes by the end of the episode. But they also spend some time complaining about their lives, about how they're not happy, or, you know, and she doesn't know much about Daemon because he's been gone for so long. And it's a really, like, it's not at this point, but later on she says that she needs her uncle, which, you know, weird thing to say to your uncle. But I mean, these times, I guess, like, that's okay.
It's the Targaryen way. It's fine.
Yeah, exactly.
It's weird thing to say a couple scenes after some, you know, beach coitus activity.
Yes, right.
Very weird.
Right.
Like, the day of your wife's funeral, that's crazy to me. Like, That's wild. Like, your kids are there on Driftmark. Like, if any, like, representative from the House Driftmark walks by and sees these Targaryens fucking, all hell is going to break loose, and they don't give a fuck. Like, that was so wild to me.
It was, and apparently what they say is true. Absence does make the heart grow fonder, because Rhaenyra pretty much tells Daemon, like, look at what my life has been without you. And he's just like, well, what do you want me to do? Like, you were a child. Like, I spared you. And she's like, yes, but I needed you. Oh my God, that like floored me.
Yeah, because, you know, her life would have been so much more calmer had she been married at 16 to the rogue prince. Okay,
right, exactly. Right. Well, they burn with the same fire, as we come to learn from her perspective. But, you know, I don't know what it was for me personally. I didn't really get that charge, that same kind of tension, like when we first saw Damon try to take Rhaenyra's maidenhood when she was a young woman. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know. The chemistry seemed maybe a little off between these two in this state and having coitus. I don't know. I didn't get the same kind of like real desire. Like they really want, I don't know. Maybe I'm just being crazy, but
I think at the funeral when they kind of like are eyeing each other, I think you see it more there than when they're actually talking to each other. It's kind of, it makes more sense in that context than when they're walking and talking about how their lives aren't as great as they should be. So the next thing we get is dragon scene with Vhagar. So Aemon, who, you know, we found out last episode, he doesn't have a dragon and he's obsessed with dragons. Well, he steals Vhagar, or claims his dragon, which we're going to get into that and how that actually works. But, you know, we have this great scene where he's flying on the back of Vhagar, which I thought, you know, looked incredible for a TV show. Like, I mean, I don't think movies would do it much better than that, honestly. The dragon looked amazing. He claims the dragon, and Damon and Lena's daughters notice that Vhagar is gone. They wake up Jace, and they tell him that someone stole Vhagar. And then we get to the kid fight. But before the fight, what did y'all think of the Aemon flying on the back of Vhagar scene? I'll go to Frank first.
I mean, it was set up perfectly for it to happen. I mean, I think you saw last week with Aemon not having a dragon. Also, one of Lannister doesn't have a dragon either, but the story is setting up for the battle lines to be drawn with the team Black against Team Green. And I mean, it was a beautiful scene to see this historical, powerful figure, literally the most powerful figure left on this planet, in the hands of an 8-year-old boy. Like that's to me the juxtapose of that scene was so powerful to me in all facets, that now the battle lines will be drawn and like they have the upper hand literally right now.
Yeah, Tristan, what'd you think about it? Oh, you're muted. Your mic's muted. There we go.
Sorry, yeah, my computer froze. I was trying to get obviously this scene is not too far off from what happens in the text, where, you know, Aemon kind of sneaks in. The only difference is that I think it was Luke, one of the strong kids, catches him like coming down a ladder or something like that, and that's when they all of the strong kids, and not just two, kind of jump them. But I mean, again, it's just tragic to me. Like, I don't want to see kids fight. I don't want to see Aemon punching two girls in the face. Like, I want to see that. Like, but
listen, Rhaena could hold her own, though.
Both of them.
She came and defended her sister after he punched Vela, and she's like, wha-pam.
Both of them had a mean hook. Mean hook.
Yeah.
But I mean, yeah, it's just like Frank said, it's just the main thing that's being illustrated here is like the battle lines just continue to draw. And like the worst part of this is that we see it on the kid level, which should be the furthest away from it. Right. But these kids are so entrenched in, and it, honestly, not just that, like the biggest thing I took from that scene was just how, and not just that scene, but the last episode as well, is just like how attached these dragons are to the way these kids see themselves. And like they were really literally ready to go to war behind a dragon, not because this dragon is like this is a thing that I have and nobody else has, or everybody else has and I don't have, but this dragon is seen as a sign of strength. Right. And if you have this dragon, that you can be a part of this fraternity. And like these are family members all like fighting almost to the death. Like, why are you bringing a blade to go see about a dragon when literally technically is nothing but family on this island at this particular juncture. So it's just the tragedy of it for me. And like just the devolving of like this family. Like Rhaenyra said, like we were one house and we were family, and it's clearly not that. They don't even see each other as family at this point.
No, they don't. And Aemon makes it very clear in that cave when all the kids come to discover it's him that stole Vhagar, and you know, words are exchanged, and he of course calls the kids Jace and Luke bastards, and it is extremely sad to see these kids fighting amongst each other. However, I do have to give it to them for holding their own. Just saying, like, if you're going to get into a fight, like it's one thing my dad always taught me, because my dad used to box. He's like, if you're going to hit someone, you better hit them hard enough that they cannot hit you back. And that's just kind of my mentality of it. That's why I give props to these kids for being able to hold their own. And I think it would have been foolish for the kids to go anywhere without protecting themselves one way or another. So, you know, on one aspect, why did Jace have a knife if they're going to go see about a dragon? But at the other end of that, it's like, it's just foolish not to go somewhere and not have protection of some sort. Cause they obviously didn't have the Kingsguard to protect them. So
I think, I think what's so crazy too, is that you don't really see dialogue from the parents or their adults of like saying to the kids, hey, don't fuck with them, or hey, this is why we don't fuck with them. It's more rooted through their actions of how they treat each other. And like in real life, kids see that and kids emulate that. So it's like, oh shit, Auntie Ray Ray don't fuck with Uncle JoJo. Oh, okay, well shit, I don't fuck with Uncle JoJo's kids either. Like it's so sad what's being adopted through just actions. I mean, I think outside of one isolated scene of like Allison talking to Aegon last episode about his succession, this hasn't really been much influence from the parents verbally. It's more so from actions.
Yeah. Well, unless Queen Allison drinks a shit ton, Aegon has definitely picked up on that, because that's why he was nowhere to be seen during this whole thing. I mean, let's look at the kids real quick, right? Aegon, we learn that he's betrothed to his sister Helaena. Helaena, special child.
What the fuck is that, man? Like, this is my problem with this show. Like, this whole, we're just gonna like low key just throw shit in here and cast off as a low key thing, but that's high key as fuck. Like, I need a scene of him being betrothed to his sister. Like, that's a big thing that happens not just in the books, but for the rest of the Targaryen line. That needs to be demonstrated. It needs to be acted out. I don't want to hear this. It's a limited series. We ain't got time. Motherfucker, you have time. Spend 2 minutes in that scene and act that shit out. That's huge.
Right. And then, Frank, I think you were the one who mentioned it last week about Helaena kind of being maybe positioned in the sense of, like Targaryens of past, being a seer or a dreamer or that kind of thing, because she's spewing words that kind of come off as being a little cuckoo. But she says, hand turns loom, spool of green, spool of black, dragons of flesh, weaving dragons of thread. So clearly that's going to foreshadow hand turns loom, the return of Otto Hightower, spool of green, spool of black, you know, the greens and the blacks, as we know, dragons of flesh, weaving dragons of thread. Now, I'm not quite sure what that may mean, but there's something in the works here. But Aegon expresses how he's like, she's our sister, but we have nothing in common. But yet Aemon said, had it been his duty, or had he been betrothed to Helaena, he would perform his duty. So I'm like, okay, you know, but Aegon very much likes drinking. Aemon is kind of power hungry, if you will, because why else go for the biggest, most powerful dragon still in existence? And Helaena is in her own little world. And then Jace and Luke are, you know, having to defend themselves as actually being Valerians, you know, instead of being bastard children, is what everyone is claiming them to be, right? So these kids have it tough. Just saying.
Yeah, and to go back on the dragon thing, I have a question for y'all, because, you know, so Vhagar was Lena's dragon. She obviously dies in sixth episode. Then this episode, you know, Aemon just claims her. And as one of the daughters says, "Hey, that's my mom's dragon." He says, "Well, your mom's dead." And then she says, "Well, that was mine to claim." He said, "Well, then you should have claimed her." So how does that work? Can you just claim any dragon? I mean, because to me, that was the strangest part of the episode, where this the oldest, largest dragon in the world is claimed by this 8-year-old kid or whatever. And they didn't put up any kind of a fight to go, "No, actually, that's our dragon. We've had that dragon for years." I thought that was kind of strange. So what's the process of claiming a dragon? And were y'all surprised that they didn't put up any kind of fight over Aemond Targaryen just claiming this dragon and taking this weapon, weapon of mass destruction with them to their side?
Well, the damage already been done. When the fight happened between the sisters and Aemond, he already claimed it. So it's kind of like, once that connection is sought through and Vhagar claims you back,
It happened like in the dead of night. You know what I mean? Like that's like if somebody robbed your house and took your PlayStation. It's like, well, still my PlayStation. Like, you might have it, but I'm gonna come get it. You know what I mean?
Bro, this is House of the Dragons. Ain't no rules to this shit. Like, it's first come, first serve in this motherfucker. Like, now if Aemond gets killed or he dies or whatever, then the dragon's up for grabs again. But there's no honor code of like, "Oh, okay, well, my mom's dead, so we're gonna have like this dragon ceremony to see who's next in line to claim this dragon." It's really about the dragon claims you back. And Vhagar claimed him back. So at that point, it's like, is written. It's signed, sealed, and delivered. So
shit, Laena stole Vhagar too. Like, Vhagar was by himself. Once a dragon rider dies, like I said, a dragon is up for grabs. You know, now traditionally dragons have been within the Targaryen and Valyrian house, so like it was kind of in-house who would be the next person to claim. But at a funeral, everybody's there. You got a bunch of Targaryens, a bunch of Valyrians, in theory. And he took the chance. Like, nobody else claimed her, and he took the chance.
But I think to maybe answer your question a little bit further, Justin, about why Baela didn't claim Vhagar. I mean, she lost her mother. I mean, do you really think she's going to be concerned about claiming her mother's mother's dragon when she just lost her mother? Like, that's not going to be at the forefront.
I agree. That's what I'm saying. Like, it's the dead of night of the mother's funeral. Like, it's kind of quick, kind of soon.
So let's put it this way. Aemond is ambitious, and that's going to carry on into his adulthood. Okay. He's incredibly ambitious. So for an 8-year-old Aemond to claim the biggest dragon in the world says something about his determination and his character. Now, if you're just someone who says, "Okay, this is supposed to be mine to claim, yet you didn't move on it," then that's kind of just boo on you. You should have acted on it. But Aemond he makes his own rules.
Okay. Fair enough. As we see with the fight, it turns out that, Aemond loses an eye. And did I misunderstand something earlier? But wasn't Kristen Cole supposed to be like on Night Watch?
He was given the King's Guard because the commander of the King's Guard was with the king.
Right.
But he's also Allison's protector. So
it wasn't necessarily his job to be on the look. Okay.
No.
Okay. I kind of thought maybe it was. Okay. Let's get to the post-fight, the family face-off. This is one of the best scenes of the series, I think, so far. Viserys, he questions Aemond, asks him, like, "Hey, what went down here?" And it's after Rhaenyra says, "Hey, like, my kids were defending themselves. They, they were called bastards." And he asks, like, who spread this vile insult? And it looks like he's like going to name his mom, but he doesn't say Allison. And then he mentions Aegon. And then Aegon just kind of plainly says, like, everyone knows. We all know.
No, first, I'm sorry. First, okay, Aegon was like, "Me? Like, right. I did?" Like, really? I'm telling you, the writing for this episode was just brilliantly done.
Oh, there's some comedy in this episode. Like,
for sure.
When Ser Laenor comes in and he's like, "I should have been there." She's like, Rhaenyra's like, "Those should be our house words." That was That was funny. There's some funny stuff in this episode.
But continue. Yeah. Aegon says to his father, like, everyone knows.
Right.
Continue.
And then, you know, just like the look on everybody's face, and you can just like, I mean, honestly, like as a, just a watcher of the show, like I kind of felt like the awkward feeling that everyone in that room must be feeling like, yeah, we all have eyes, dude. We can all see these kids are not hurt. I mean, yeah, she's the mother of the kids, but their father's not their father's not really their father. I don't know. Like it just, I don't know. It's very awkward to watch that scene. And then as it progresses, you know, I mean, the fact that Allison's basically like, she like demands an eye for an eye, like right there. And after the king's like, hey, enough of this. We're done with this. Everybody say your apologies and let's go back to bed. And she's like, no, that's not good enough for me. That's insufficient. And she demands an eye for an eye. And then we see, you know, her, Kristen Cole, his loyalty, like she says, Sir Kristen, take Luke's eye. And he's like, I'm just your protector.
So, like, so can I quickly comment on Allison saying she wants an eye for an eye? Did no one else get Cersei vibes from season one when she said, well, we have another wolf?
Yep. That's immediately what I thought about.
And about God.
In that one, obviously, it was a strong king and he didn't care, but he's like, yeah, just do whatever, kill it. You know, like he couldn't have cared less. But Viserys is, you know, softer, gentler kind of king.
Olivia Cooke actually did an interview. Somebody made that comparison and she said how much she loved the comparison because Cersei was her favorite character in the show. Yeah.
Well, I say let Olivia cook. You know, we need more of her. She's awesome.
Oh my God. Frank, were you going to say something?
Yeah, like this is how much the family petty level has gone up in the last like hour of these episodes. They're fighting about Aemon's eye. And I get it. It's your baby boy. He lost an eye. As a mother, I'm not a mother, but my mom would kill for me, so y'all mothers would kill for y'all too. I get it. But throughout that whole argument, this whole family squabble, nobody mentions that the largest dragon on this planet has been usurped and taken and sent to Team Green. Like, that should be a topic of discussion here, bro. Like,
well, yeah, exactly. Like, why is Damon so cool with that? I mean, he's leaning in the corner and laughing. He's enjoying this family that's like going up in flames. But
because
like,
for the first time, he's not at the center of it. He's just,
I know, but like he knows that dragon. His dead wife had that dragon. He had to obviously be around.
What
that
can
dragon.
He do?
But nobody. But like,
he can't have two dragons. He cannot have two dragons.
No, you're right. I just find it funny that nobody brings that up. Like the oldest living powerful weapon on the planet. And it's not even brought up. Like, oh, by the way, he lost the eye because they're fighting over Vhagar, and now Vhagar is owned by Aemon. Like, nobody, like, there's no level of concern. There's no level of like, oh shit, what? Like, it's like glossed over. It's crazy.
Let me say that they should absolutely talk about that. That should be a big topic of discussion. But also, we got to think about the world we're in, where like getting a dragon or bonding with a dragon is so commonplace within that family. Now, again,
what's not commonplace is the most powerful dragon in
the claim. What I'm saying. Like, now, yeah. The biggest and oldest creature on planet Earth, moving from one side of the family to the other. Yeah, I completely understand why we would talk about that. But let's talk about this eye. let's definitely talk about this.
That's
the maiming of the prince, like one of the princes. Here's my thing, because I've seen this a lot. I just saw it in the chat. The way we frame this, right? The things I've been seeing the last couple weeks is that it's Allison's. Her kids are weird. Her kids are this, that, and the third. First of all their kids are weird. That's one. All
totally
the kids, like, literally every kid we see is weird as fuck. Two, they have a father. Like, and I think like not insufficient blame has been placed. When I think all the blame should be placed on Viserys, who is not just a weak king, but a weak father, weak husband. Like, he's weak in all phases of his life. So maybe, like, some of the quirks that these kids have come from the blonde side of their family. Like, I just want to throw that out there. Like, Allison, I've seen a lot of Allison slander. She definitely deserves some criticism. But man, I the Gimpy King has been spared a lot of criticisms where I think he deserves the lion's share of it.
You know why, though? I think, honestly, because she's such a powerful character and he is not. Like, I mean, the actor's great. Patty Constantine's great, and he's playing that role perfectly. But he, like, in this episode, even though he's the king and, you know, he's shouting, like, this will end, this will cease, whatever, it doesn't cease. It continues because Rhaenyra is strong-willed, and so is Alicent, and obviously Daemon is, and he's just the weakest of all the characters.
I think all these people have to be stronger-willed because he's so weak. Like, Alicent, Alicent was not this strong-willed. Her own father said it. Like,
no,
think this was, I didn't even think this existed inside of you. You know what I'm saying? But the circumstances, and again, this, oh my, full circle, jeez. This is why I'm Team Alicent. I'm Team Alicent because more than any other major character in the story, she's a victim of her circumstances. And she's had to rise up and become some things she wasn't at first, like more power hungry, more protective, more assertive, because one, everybody around her is fortified in a way that she's not. And two, everybody was stronger. You know, everybody had a stronger will and that she didn't have. And the circumstances said, no, actually, you have to be stronger willed. You can't be passive and you can't just rely on the structures and stuff that had been in place before you to make sure that everything's okay. That's why I'm Team Alicent. She's a victim, more so. Not, that's not to say that she's not deserving of critique, but she is absolutely more of a victim of her circumstances than everybody else. And what we've seen is just a reaction to that. Now, some of that reaction will live in ways that even myself, who's Team Alicent, does not agree with. But once you get into the once the circumstances happen and you have to react to them, everything else is just kind of just falls, you know, based on that. But that's my rationale for being Team Alicent.
So it's kind of funny because I was just going to comment on that. Patrice says, Alicent is lucky she's the queen. To strike the princess of Dragonstone and heir to the Iron Throne should have been immediate death for her and members of her family. So that was going to be the question I lay out for everyone here, particularly Tristan, since he is Team Green. I understand her being a product of her environment. She snapped. I get that. I'm not a parent, but there isn't anything I wouldn't do for my dog. Okay. Including cutting someone. I get it. So, however, she openly disobeys a king's directive, her husband's directive, and takes his own dagger off his own body to come after his daughter, the princess, the heir, in front of, I don't know how many people are there, but no one can say otherwise. It was apparent, and there are no consequences whatsoever. And I know this is because Viserys is a weak human being, but that is just mind-blowing that she struck and drew blood, and yet nothing happened to her whatsoever.
I mean, we should be used to one of the major female characters of this show doing things that she not supposed to do, breaking from tradition and getting away with it. Like, that's...
But Rhaenyra never openly attacked the queen the way the queen did with Rhaenyra. If Rhaenyra does whatever she does behind the scenes, and yes, people know that her children are not legitimate children. I get that. I understand. I'm not saying Rhaenyra is doing anything right either. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying this was blatant in front of all people, and not a damn thing was done after that.
Who's the king?
And that's what I'm saying. I know it's because Viserys is a weak human being.
I think that
it should have never gotten to that point in the first place. But go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely Viserys. Like, I mean, if you're a strong king, that it doesn't get to that point. But also, I think what plays, and you saw in Game of Thrones, like with the Lannisters. The Lannisters was the most powerful, richest house in the Seven Kingdoms, and King Robert was beholden to that. Like, he couldn't redo what he wanted to do. Say with the Hightowers, they got long bread. They got long influence too, from Old Town all throughout the Seven Kingdoms as well. And I think that plays a huge part too. And in a way, Viserys is beholden to that too. And then now with Otto being back in the fold as Hand of the King, he can't really just punish her like he, you know, because the Hightowers play such a major role and it has so much influence in the Seven Kingdoms. Just because you're king doesn't mean you can do whatever you want to do. There's a famous line King Robert says. He's like, I thought being king meant I can do whatever I wanted. No, nigga, it's not. It's so much, there's so much revolving political chess moves here that has to be honored and played. You can't just do what you want. You can't just arrest people who you want to arrest, especially people who have power and influence over you and your house. And that's the mother too. Like, he has kids. Like, this is the mother. So it's convoluted.
Yeah, and not only that, like, but with Rhaenyra and her children, no one can actually prove that her children are illegitimate or not. I mean, we know differently, of course. She's openly confessed it to Daemon and what have you. That's whatever. But like, no one can argue that Allison did what she did, right? And what's going to go around the realm is that the queen attacked the princess and nothing happened. That to me is still just mind blowing.
Yeah. To kind of put a bow on this family scene, Aemond has the last word. He says, "Do not mourn me, mother. It was a fair exchange. I may have lost an eye, but I gained a dragon." And then we
simply poetic.
Yeah. And then we see Otto come to visit Allison, and you know, she is, you know, pretty mortified about what happened. She's definitely not proud of what she did. Otto is the opposite. He's never been more proud of her. He's like, you know, we play an ugly game, but now I see you have the determination to win it. And he says, in time we will prevail. And then he also mentions, hey, like, the your son was right. Like, he lost an eye, but what he got was, you know, way more valuable. You know, we now have this dragon. And I don't know. It was an interesting scene to see how Otto was so proud of her, because now she's not only in the game, but she's in it to win it. So
bad influences everywhere.
And real quick, but we talked about this before Tristan joined, but Tristan, what did you think about Otto already? Like, this episode starts and he's the Hand of the King right away. Like, how does that happen between what happened in episode 6 and episode 7? How does he get that job so quickly?
Easy. There's no other options. Viserys had a public falling out with Corlys Velaryon, so it can't be him. Never will be Daemon. Lionel Strong obviously is dead. Yeah. Like, there's just not a ton of options. Viserys, and this plays out in the book, like, Lionel Strong dies. Otto just comes strolling right back in. It's not a lot of fanfare. Just like, hey, there's just not a ton of options. There really are no options. There was some thought about the Lannister, Tywin Lannister, but that didn't work out. I think he actually did serve as Hand of the King for like a very brief moment before Otto came, but just not a lot of good options, honestly. And again, Otto Hightower had served two other kings before Viserys, served Viserys for a long time. Like, just there's a comfortability level with Otto that, you know, he didn't have with anybody else. Now, for Otto, there's a certain thing about, you know, maybe taking that job one too many times, but
right.
Yeah. Third time's a charm, Kristen. Third time's a charm.
Third time is not a charm.
Not a charm. No, it's not.
But yeah.
So up next, we see Laenor finally arrives. As I mentioned, he says he should have been there. Rhaenyra's getting her arm stitched up, and they talk about how, you know, he says, I hate the gods for making me as they did. Obviously, reference to the fact that he's, you know, he is gay and he'd rather be with men than women. And then they talk about, she says, no, you know, I don't think that at all. I think, you know, you're a stand up guy and, you know, you're honorable and that's hard to find. And then he talks about how, you know, now that he's seen his sister die, that's really impacted his life, and he wants to recommit himself to Rhaenyra and her, you know, her taking the throne eventually. And then he says that, you know, she deserves a husband, and that's what he's plans to do. And she loves their children, even though he knows they're not actually his kids. And, you know, in this moment, obviously we'll get to the end of the episode in a little bit, but in this moment, as he's talking, he's having this heartfelt kind of, you know, talk. I'm like, this dude is so dead. He's so dead in the next like 10 or 15 minutes. Then we see what happens. And obviously I wasn't accurate with that prediction, but I was like, I mean, this is like, they're going to kill this guy right now. Obviously y'all know the book, although in the book, it doesn't work out the same way, I've heard, right? With Lehner, like, obviously we'll just fast forward. Obviously, his death is faked. It's an elaborate plan by Rhaenyra and Daemon. And, yeah, he sails away to the
with Carl Corey
Carl with a Q to the Narrow Sea. Tell me how that plays out in the book, and what did y'all think about how it works out in this episode?
I actually really enjoyed how this worked out in the episode, because let's just face it, Fire and Blood, you like Game of Thrones, you could probably put a little tab for every death. Every few pages, or, you know, multiple deaths on one page, right? And Lehner was no exception. There was a discussion about the Stepstones, that Sir Carl Corey was going to go back to the Stepstones because they needed to be defended. And if I'm not mistaken, Tristan, Frank, correct me, Lehner also fights in the Stepstones, and that's how he dies. I think, if not, he dies. I mean, he does die in the book. However, I think for Lehner to gain some kind of happiness in being his true self and not having the obligations of being a king consort or raising kids whom he does love, but it's not really a way of living, if you will, for him. And so I think to humanize Rhaenyra and Daemon, for that matter, in a very twisted way, to give him his freedom to live his life the way he wants to without those constraints.
In all seriousness too, I think this is probably the second most shocking thing that I thought didn't go the way I thought it would go. The first one being Vhagar not being a topic of discussion in that family feud. And then with Lehner leaving your life as a highborn, leaving your dragon for some common folk dick is wild to me. Like, that's wild. Like, you're leaving.
Low-key forgot about the dragon. Low-key forgot about sea smoke.
Bro, like, I'm not leaving my dragon, and I'm not leaving my high life for common folk dick. Like, I'm a straight man, and I don't care if I have the best vagina in the world in my possession. I'm not leaving my life for that. That's wild. You're going to Essos just to be another gay guy amongst a bunch of regular old folk in Essos. Like, nobody gives a fuck who you are. Nobody's gonna care about you. You gotta go bald. You can't even mention that you're Valerian. Like, you're gonna be another common folk dude in Essos. Get some common folk dude. That's I don't know. That's
but he's rich, right, though. He's got money. They gave him money, right?
Yeah, but what's he gonna do?
Just let the man be happy.
He wanted to be free.
Let him be happy.
But he can't work. Like, what's he gonna do? Like, what is he gonna be? Go be a smith somewhere? Like, what is he gonna do when that money runs out?
He might hoe himself out. We don't know, and make some money that way.
And that's better than being king consort and the high. That's I don't know, man. That's
to each their own. I was not mad at the decisions of.
You left your dragon, bro. Like your dragon is like. I'm not leaving no dragon, bro. I'm not.
I get that.
I'm not. I can't do that.
Tristan, what are your thoughts on the change of Lehner's death?
I'm gonna read what's actually from the book. So this is a quick book spoiler, just to show you know, kind of the difference between how it played out on the show and here. Sir Lehner Valerion, husband to the Princess Rhaenyra and the putative father of her children, was slain whilst attending a fair in Spicetown, stabbed to death by his friend and companion, Sir Carl Corey. The two men had been quarreling loudly before blades were drawn. Merchants at the fair told Lord Valerion when he came to collect his son's body. Corey had fled by then, wounding several men who tried to hinder him. Some claimed a ship had been waiting for him offshore. He was never seen again. So that gives credence to like the fact that there was a plan, some type of machination put in place to aid Sir Carl Corey after faking Laenor's death. But if Corlys Velaryon came to retrieve his body, which he did, then again, it's left up to interpretation whether that was his actual body, like we saw in the show,
right.
Or if he really was killed. But like that is the paragraph. It never gets brought up again. Like the only time we mention Laenor is in service of like Rhaenyra and a new husband or one of the kids, but they never mention him or whether he's alive or not again.
So he's not mentioned in the book going forward. Do we think we're going to see this guy again? Because the actor did a great job. No, you don't think so. Okay.
No, that would be really difficult to explain him coming back when there was a burned body.
Well,
inside the Hall of Nine.
I didn't know if we were going to see him on wherever adventure he's on, or if at some point other characters are in the same region or something. So you're saying there's no chance of that. We're just going to be moving on.
I mean, it's hard to say, like, because we have a whole other season that's going to happen in the future. So, I mean, I would think no. Again, it'd be awkward to explain. And I think how they did it.
I thought that was a hell of a reveal, though, because I thought, as we're led to believe, that Daemon is telling Sir Carl, if you kill Laenor for us, we're going to give you all this money. You're a free man. You can go do whatever you want to do. And the fact that we see Daemon, who kidnaps some guy who I guess works in Driftmark or in the Drift Hall or whatever it's called. Yeah. And then obviously they burn that guy's body, and that's what Rhaenys and Corlys, that's what they find.
The boots were the identifier, because we see Laenor running on the beach without boots. And
right.
He shaved off his dreads, which very sad. I love the dreads. I love the look of the Velaryons. They look fantastic. My gosh.
I just thought it was a cool scene. He's getting in the rowboat or whatever, and he's got the hood off and head shaved, and he's like, we're out of here. Like, this is, we're done. Let's talk about the last thing is the wedding. We had a funeral. We had a dragon was stolen. Let's get this wedding between
another death.
Another death. Yeah. Brittany, talk about the wedding between Rhaenyra and Daemon.
That wedding, I believe, is the traditional Valyrian style wedding, which included using a obsidian, I guess you'd call it sphere or blade. They cut their bottom lip down the middle, and I guess wipe that their blood to their soon to be spouse's forehead, vice versa. You also saw that blade being used to cut the palm, each other's palm, and then they would, clasp their hands together and have it bound in holy matrimony and bloody holy matrimony. I feel bad for these kids. I mean, these kids have gone through the ringer of losing a mother, getting into a fight with their family members. Poor Luke got his nose broken, and now they're gaining a stepfather / cousin, uncle / it's really complicated. Obviously, this is Targaryen we're talking about. And I think this was maybe done on Dragonstone. I can't imagine this would have been done on Driftmark. However, this blood wedding, as I'm going to call it, is I think a traditional Valyrian style wedding.
So that's the uncle daddy, the great uncle daddy.
Yo, listen. Yeah. Someone on Twitter said he isn't the stepfather. He's the father who stepped up, and I'm like, ooh. I kind of vibe with that. Like, I can dig it.
Yeah, that's a great uncle daddy. Because if Rhaenyra's, that's kind of so fucked up, man.
Where's little Joffrey? He wasn't there.
Joffrey was very, very probably too tiny to travel, so it's fine. It's fine.
Well, is he gonna claim Laenor's dragon? Is someone gonna claim him? Because Apparently, it's just whoever shows up can get
Joffrey gets his own dragon, because remember with the Targaryen Velaryon tradition, they get a dragon egg in their cradle, right, and then it'll hatch. So Joffrey gets his own.
Okay.
And his name, its name is Taraxes, I think.
Okay. So just to put in perspective for how sick Viserys is in his age, Viserys is in his 40s at this time. He's in his mid-40s.
Looks like 70s or 80s.
That's crazy.
Although he looks a little better in this episode than he did in the previous. Or is that just me? Maybe it's just me.
It might be the angle they used when they were showing him or something.
He looked less Gollum-like, less Tales of the Crypt Keeper-like in this episode than he did previous. Previous episode was bad.
That's wild to me that you... I mean, he's hung on for 10 plus years, which is amazing. But to be looking like 75 and you're 44, that's crazy.
Yeah, exactly. Tristan, do you have any thoughts on the bloody Targaryen wedding?
I was, like I said, we've never seen that type of wedding before. So if that's like the Valyrian, I thought, because the only thing that really binds them like is like Valyria. So if we're talking about Valyrian, like Valyrian wedding, then that makes sense to me. But like Valyrian, I didn't get that. But yeah,
I was saying Valyrian.
Oh, okay, yeah, that makes
it's sense. I agree, Justin. George R. R. Martin should have come up with different words that didn't sound alike. Valyrian, Valyrian.
Yeah,
I'm pretty sure he did that.
Eric and Eric. Justin and sure Frank know what I'm talking about.
But yeah, I mean, just understanding that everything was leading towards Daemon and Rhaenyra getting married, you know, it was always supposed to happen. It's a little tasteless that this happened, I'm assuming, like a few days or so after his own.
A little.
I mean, they did the nasty. She's probably knocked up. Okay, we need to explain things quickly. Well,
that's something else. Like, obviously, she's gonna have their child. So then they have this like bizarro blended family. I mean, these kids, like, I guess they're all gonna be like brother or sister kind of thing. But it's so, man, figuring out their incest family tree is not fun.
The kids get a short end of the stick with all this fucking and incest and in conceiving of kids. They get the short end of the stick in the story.
I'm guessing that some of them are going to be betrothed to each other, right?
On one side.
Yeah, we
already see Aegon and Helena are...
Right, but what about with Daemon and Rhaenyra's children?
There are some proposals that are made. Okay.
That
may or may not get actually done, but their proposals.
Okay. Yeah. Short end of the DNA.
Here's a semi spoiler. Almost none of these kids are living long lives.
I'm not surprised by that.
Yeah, like, I mean, that's the tragedy of it. Is like this is a very tragic story. So even if there are marriage proposals, like, so many marriage proposals get made and not consummated because shit happens.
But for the Conquest of Dorne, that's the next major thing after Dance of the Dragons. A couple of their kids do get betrothed to each other, because Viserys the second gets betrothed to Rhaegar, and that's where Aegon the Unworthy comes from in that line. So Aegon the Unworthy, Aegon the Fifth, comes from Rhaenyra and Daemon's line. Yeah, but they have, they have four kids, if I remember correctly. But I know at least a pair are betrothed to each other and have kids.
Yeah, we definitely need more Aegons, right? That's what we're missing in this world.
Dude, and then there's a couple of Aegons that don't count, that they just kind of just look over like, is this wild? I don't know.
Yeah, like Jon Snow. Just kidding.
Yeah, Aegon the Sixth.
Yeah.
Sixth, but really seventh of his name. But something like sixth that. Of his name. Yeah.
So before we look ahead to episode 8, do y'all have any final thoughts on episode 7?
Wonderful episode. The rewatch, I was still just like in awe. And I do quickly want to share some of my favorite lines from this episode. Damon to Otto when Otto offers his condolences, and Damon says to him, "No matter how fat the leech grows, it always wants another meal." I'm like, damn, that was good. Also, we overlooked Viserys calling Allison Emma. He said, "I'm going to bed Emma." Yep. And she looks at him like, the fuck? Beautiful line. And then one more from Viserys to Allison during this whole quarrel of who did what to whom. Allison saying, you know, she wants an eye for an eye. And he says to her, "Do not let your temper guide your judgment." And I think that was just beautifully written, beautifully said. So Viserys might be a weak king, but damn, can he deliver words at times. But overall, strong, love the episode.
Strong speaker, not the strongest dude. Frank, final thoughts on the episode.
Let's get into the nitty gritty, man. We're getting to the fourth quarter, bro. Opening quarter, the Greens in a 12-0 run right now, man. So, you know, we'll see. But I mean, the battle lines have been drawn. You about to see some MVP level acting, or you should, from the kids. As these kids get older, they're gonna play such a pivotal role, and the tipping scale of this dynasty that we call it the Targaryen dynasty. So it's a great show, man. I fucking love it. I wish it was a 8-9 season thing. I hate it as a limited series. So much story to be told here, man. This is just fucking great.
So much story, so many different angles, even from like things that happen outside the family. It's so rich. And that's the beautiful part of it. But for me, it's both a look back at this episode and a look forward to the rest of the season. Like I really truly wonder how they're going to frame both sides. Like again, I thought the show was kind of setting up for like a more neutral, unbiased, slightly biased view of both Greens and Blacks. In the text, like they want you to believe that both sides are awful and both sides have components and people on their side who are like really horrible and you should never root for them. This side, I mean, I can see they're kind of leaning towards one side. It makes for great TV, amazingly great TV. And it's going to continue to captivate people because there's nothing more we love than to choose sides and just blindly ride for that side. But
yeah, we know, Tristan, we know.
Yeah. But I'm very interested to see how they frame, you know, both Rhaenyra and Allison going forward. Because for me personally, I think they're two tragic figures.
Right.
And they're just set in this world in which they have to be this particular like archetype. And then the circumstances just kind of keep drawing them away from each other and even more vicious. But I'm just interested to see how it plays out going forward.
Yeah, I think that in that scene with the families right before Allison has sliced Rhaenyra's, it's right after she slices her arm, and the two just look at each other and you think about all the history, all the stuff we've seen with all the time jumps and different actors and people who played these characters. They have so much history, and you see that like in that, just them looking at each other like, man, what has happened to our lives? Like, this is such a crazy story. I think you're absolutely right, Tristan. I think they're both like, you know, these tragic figures who are caught up in this world. I mean, these were like best friends and now they're bitter rivals, and it sounds like the war is upon us. So that was a great episode. Now let's look ahead to episode 8. Again, it looks like we have another time jump coming. Looks like another 10 years or so based on
6 years.
So it's only 6 years. Okay. So all the kid actors, we're getting a reset of those once again. We see Otto. He's standing before the throne. He says he speaks on behalf of the king. That can't be good for Team Rhaenyra. Then Rhaenyra is quoted as saying, "Those vipers rule in my father's name." So I guess Viserys is in really bad shape. He's not dead, right? We don't think he's dead yet. Do we?
Looking at the show, the episode titles, my personal, I thought he was gone, and I think he's gone in the penultimate.
Okay, yeah. That makes
episode,
sense.
But yeah, which you're seeing the last of Viserys.
Yeah.
That's pretty clear.
Mm-hmm.
After the Rhaenyra quote of saying that, you know, they're these vipers are ruling in my father's name, we see Daemon talk to her. He says, "Okay, to King's Landing then." So sounds like they're they're going to leave Dragonstone and head there for this battle. I assume that's about to happen. Then we see Kristen Cole sparring with an older Aemon with the eye patch. Then we hear that the Sea Snake is badly wounded in the Stepstones and he's likely dead, I would think. And also during that, there's a part in that where I think we lost Frank. I think he had to leave us. We see Vaymond kind of like give a wink to Rhaenys. And then we see him talking to her and he's saying, who will take the Driftwood throne? Are we meant to believe that Vaymond had something to do with Corlys's death?
See, this is, I think, different. Yeah, this is a different adaptation than what the book is, because I don't anticipate Corlys dying.
Right.
Just because he has a role to play in the future. Kind of a big role to play in the future. So I don't foresee his death.
And he lives a long time.
Yeah.
He lives a very long time.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But I mean, the way they made it, they framed it.
It might be an attempt.
Right.
It might be a poor attempt to try to claim to be Lord of the High Tides, but I don't think it's something that is actually going to come into fruition. So yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Because then later on, we see Vaemond marching an army into King's Landing. And the way I look at it is he's trying to broker a deal with the Greens, right? Is that what fair to say?
I think it's just important to remember that lines have been drawn.
Yep.
The Velaryons are very much on Team Black. I mean, interpret that as you will, but they're definitely not Team Green. Let's put it that way.
Not even Vaemond.
Not even Vaemond. I don't believe so. Vaemond. Yeah.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Given all that's happened, I thought they might switch after, you know, what happened to Laena and Laenor.
You know, the show, again, has taken some creative liberties from the book to adapt things in such a way where, just like with Laenor's death, that's not something that happened in the book, and how they executed it, I thought was well done. So if, let's say, we're going to position Vaemond to be kind of a character who is tired of being behind the scenes and wants to claim everything that his brother has, and he makes attempts, but he may fail. I mean, that's one way of doing things, but we obviously just have to watch the next episode to find out.
I honestly don't know what's going to happen with that. Just don't know. That's something that it seems like a sub storyline that they, like Brittany said, they just kind of took a creative license with. And we'll see. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because the title of the next episode, if the titles we discovered a while back are correct, it's called The Lord of the Tides. So would that imply to Corlys, or like what he mentioned with Luke, or with maybe Vaemond looking to take that spot?
It might be just something amongst them, because now Corlys doesn't have an heir to his position, lands and what have you. And unless he doesn't pass it on to Baela, as Princess Rhaenys had suggested, or things of that nature, it could be kind of like a usurper kind of situation. Who knows?
I will say that eventually Corlys does get in the air.
Oh, right.
I don't know if we're that late in the story for them to tell that, but it's possible. Like I said, I don't know. We'll see.
Okay.
we'll definitely see.
I forgot about that.
It's
really interesting because, like, they show a look between Rhaenys and Vaemond, and it makes me think like they're either in some kind of cahoots together, they're gonna flip. I don't know. They wouldn't show us that if there wasn't something to that, I believe. But
misdirection.
It could be a total misdirection, yeah. But I do like it, you know, even though there is text for this story and y'all have read the book and y'all know what happens, I do like how they kind of, in their adaptation, they kind of spin it, you know, like where it's not word for word, like we're taking this page and putting this on the screen. We're taking the great stuff from this page, and we're making it work with our story, but we're not going word for word. So I think that's really interesting, because there's tons of people that read the book, these books, and you know, I think it's good to surprise everybody with something new and to be creative. And the show, just like Game of Thrones, has continued to do that. And yeah, I mean, I can't wait for the next episode, but it's just sad we only have 3 episodes left. Mm-hmm. And then who knows when we're going to have season 2. I mean, I think there was news this week that season 2 would begin shooting in March, which means it probably won't return until 2024, I would think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So anyway, do y'all have any final thoughts on the teaser for next week?
I mean, like Frank said, we're getting down to the nitty gritty. We're about to see some heavy stuff happen.
Yeah, if there's anybody complaining about a lack of action, I think these last 3 episodes will cure that.
Make up for that, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So we're gonna see some dragons dancing. Is that what you're saying?
We're gonna see some dancing. Maybe not.
Yeah, not that. Not that. No.
Yeah.
Definitely.
They'll probably save that for season 2, I would think. Or,
I think they're definitely gonna say
I think
that.
So. Yeah. The way that the story has progressed, even with the time jumps, I definitely think that Dance of Dragons is really going to be towards the end of season 2.
Yeah, because once you get these dragons involved, there's not a whole lot left, I think, to play with, honestly.
No, not one bit. So, Very cool. People in the live chat are ready for it. Trisha over here says she's ready for the episode. Ask Big Cap, thank you so much for joining us, says, great show, The Watchers in the Basement. Appreciate it. Very much appreciate it. We do enjoy what we do.
Yeah, we had a question from someone said, what about his granddaughters? I'm not sure.
Corliss.
Corliss's granddaughter. Okay.
Right. If the Driftmark would pass on to his granddaughters, like Princess Rhaenys had suggested.
That's what Rhaenys, yeah, that's what she wanted. Okay.
Right. Exactly. So, yeah.
Okay. Cool.
Possibly.
Fun episode. Hey, Brittany, if people want to talk about this episode, how can they find us on social media to discuss it with us?
Well, first of all, shout out to everyone in the chat that stopped by today to show your support. Texas Potterhead, Ask Big Cap, Own Kind of Beauty, LDJ, McDorks, Geeking Out with Millie Mel, all of Amber's Wands. We've had a lot of people in the chat today. We really appreciate that. Patrice, thank you so much. And Daryl, we appreciate you guys being here. If you haven't already done so already, give this video a like. Also subscribe to our YouTube channel as we continue to gain 200 subscribers. We are about 114 now. So let's increase that number. But also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Watchers Basement. And you can also spread the word about us by using hashtag Watchers Basement to help grow our audience. Tag us in articles, memes, things that you just want us to take a look at, review. We'd be more than happy to do that. And for your audio podcast needs, we are also on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, thanks to Anchor.fm. Give us a 5-star rating. That would really help us out, help others learn about The Watchers in the Basement. And back to you, Justin.
Thanks, Brittany. Appreciate it. So for Brittany, for Tristan, this is Justin saying we'll see you next week. We're back to talk about episode 8 of House of the Dragon. Thanks. See you next week.
What a watch.